RPG Lessons Learned. When the game is over, when your players are gone, that's when lessons are learned. We are at RPGLL Podcast on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook, rpglpodcast@gmail.com, and check us out online at rpglessonslearned.com.
Welcome to RPG Lessons Learned. I am Brian. This is the show where you can learn from our mistakes. Joining me this week are Dusty.
Hey, guys.
Hey, Dusty, our usual host.
Yep.
And Mike.
Hey, Brian.
So I'm starting off the show this week because Mike and I are grilling Dusty on his game that he plays with our friend Martin. It's in Castles and Crusades.
It is.
Which I have never played.
Me neither.
You know, that surprises me because Castles and Crusades is one of the two games right now where I'm a completionist. Like every time Stephen Chenault, who runs Trollord Games, does a Kickstarter, I back his stuff. And by the way, I always say this, no affiliation. No, don't know the guy, never spoken with him. He has no idea we're saying this. I'm not wholeheartedly endorsing the game for everyone. It just so happens to be one of the games that I'm in love with, and I'm in love with it because of Martin's campaign.
So how far back does this game go? With the alliteration, it makes me think it's an early derivative of D&D, but I'm guessing that it's probably not.
Castles and Crusades is technically OGL 3.0, 3.5. So technically it's derived from the 3.5 OGL, but it has much more of an old school bent. But I really like it. I mean, to me, when I look at Castles and Crusades, Castles and Crusades is an alternate universe 5th edition. Like a lot of things that 5th edition did, where 5th edition said, okay, forget the extra defenses, forget fortitude and reflex. You're just going to make saving throws against your normal 6 stats. What used to be your reflex saving throw and then ultimately became your reflex defense in 4th edition, that's now just a dexterity saving throw in 5th edition. The same is true in the Castles and Crusades, and it was that case for years. So Castles and Crusades has nothing outside of the 6 basic attributes.
Mm-hmm.
The neat thing they did is they have these primary and secondary attributes. So if you're a fighter, strength is one of your primary attributes. That means, here's what I really love about Castles and Crusades. If you make a strength check as a fighter,
mm-hmm.
you're rolling against a 12. Your goal is to hit a 12. If you make a dexterity check
as
a fighter...
My dog Max agrees.
Yes.
I haven't played Castles and Crusades, but it sounds like he has.
Yes. The dog is always there, but only today is he barking for some reason.
Yeah.
Anyway, if I make a dexterity check and it's a secondary attribute, my target number is 18. So players just know that. Everyone just knows that. Primary attributes, if you're rolling, you're trying to hit a 12. Secondary, you're trying to hit 18. And then the GM can add difficulty to it. So the GM could say difficulty 5. Well, if it's a primary attribute, that means you got to hit a 17. If it's a secondary attribute, you got to hit a 23.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So, which, you know, is easier math than you think. But it's really cool because it's a neat way to make sure that the rogues succeed on a lot of deck stuff, but fail at other stuff. To make sure fighters succeed on a lot of strength stuff, but miss on other stuff.
So
it's a neat differentiating mechanic.
The reason that that throws me off is because, again, we have so many systems rattling around in our heads that we've played recently, and that would just be something else that I would lose track of.
You say that? I will admit, Brian, the main reason I love this system is there's a character creation spreadsheet by a guy named Eric Campion, and that spreadsheet is the reason I like the game, because it manages all that for you. Because to make things even harder, for your saving throws, not all the time, but mm-hmm. for a saving throw, you can add half your level.
Oh, wow.
To what you roll. Well, that, amongst other things, the primary, secondary, the adding half your level and all that, this spreadsheet character builder that this guy created manages it all for you. So right there on my character sheet, I have, you know, all my stats, strength, dexterity, charisma, intelligence, wisdom, et cetera, et cetera. I have it all. And then I have my normal target number. So I have my modifier, my normal target, and my saving throw target. Mm-hmm. So it has all my numbers right there in easy reference.
Okay.
But yeah, we talked a while ago about games should be digital first, especially this day and age.
Yep.
And Castles and Crusades isn't, but this spreadsheet makes the experience that way for me. And I love my characters in Martin's game.
How long have you been playing this campaign?
A couple of years. But this is probably a story that most gamers are familiar with. We only play, I think, on average, 5 times a year.
Oh, wow.
We've been playing since 2015, and we are up to our 13th session.
Wow, we do that in a year.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, we do that in less than a year.
6 months, yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we in Martin's game, I don't get to play very much. Actually, ironically, I don't get to play much, but when I do play, I play a whole lot.
It's kind of like one of those days when it rains, it pours. You get together and you play like all day.
Yeah, well, we actually don't. We play about 2 to 3 hours.
Huh.
But I play 2 characters.
Ah.
And there's usually one other player playing 2 characters. So I am, quote, taking my turn a lot.
Gotcha.
That's the exact opposite of someone else we know who told us that he often plays like weekly in a game where there's like 18 people at a table. And you never actually have a turn for like, it's like 30 or 40 minutes.
Yeah, in Martin's game, because I run 2 characters, and then Martin plays with his brother. So his brother Bernard, I'm intruding on their game, but they're both very gracious about it, and we all have a great time. But Bernard plays 2 characters, and it feels like I'm playing half the time. So it's a lot of play density.
I can't imagine playing with my brother. Just my brother would totally not, any of them, none of them would
be
not
be into this.
No.
Yeah, that'd be like me playing D&D with my sister. I don't see that happening either. That'd be weird.
I could totally see playing D&D with my siblings, but not right now.
I could see your
everyone's busy and all that.
I could see your sister being more into it than my brothers.
I think that's fair.
Yeah. Yeah.
It'd be really weird to play with your brothers. Yeah.
I mean, Steve is awesome and all that, but Steve doesn't talk. He would roll 16.
He would have a lot of surly contemplative moments in character.
Yeah.
So how confusing is it trying to play 2 characters in a single game?
Not at all, man. You'd think it would be. And in fact, Mike, when we played in your game, when Chris and I, sorry, Brian, played in your game, Mike,
yeah,
and we played 2 characters each, it was a bit confusing.
Yep.
I mean, who am I? What turn am I taking? But I've been playing long enough that I may not recommend it for beginners, but it's, for whatever reason, it's no problem. I mean, it's I play a cleric and a fighter. They're very easy to keep separate. They have very different stats. There are very different things they should be doing in combat because my cleric, you know, I straight up rolled 3d6, by the way, for every stat. I rolled 3d6 in front of Martin, so my characters are not that effective. They're not that mechanical.
Yeah.
They're not that optimized. And there are very different things they should be doing and thinking about. So it's pretty easy to keep them separate.
So you've been playing the game now for 3 years. What's your campaign like? What's the structure of the game?
Totally different from mine. Totally different. So Martin has this homebrew setting called Dehanan. And it's this, I mean, he sent me the map. He sent me the world map. And we're going through his homebrew setting. And to tell you a little bit of the campaign, where we're playing from off of a boat, basically. There's this boat, and we go from port to port. And for the most part, with some exceptions, for the most part, the journeys by boat take place between sessions. And then during the session, we've landed at a port, and we have an adventure in some port. So it's a lot like an episode of Star Trek.
Yeah.
Where, okay, at the beginning of the episode, you drop out of warp at some planet, and then you have your whole adventure on that planet, and then at the end, you leave. And that's what the game is like. So what that makes the game like, man, it's setting-driven. Have you ever read Orson Scott Card's Characters and Viewpoint?
No, I've not read Ender's Game either.
So Characters and Viewpoint, it's not a fiction. It's a book about writing. And he talks about a lot of things. God, it's a great book. If you're a writer, I really recommend it. Again, no affiliation. But he talks about some different kinds of stories and ways to structure stories. And there's the character-driven story. There's the plot-driven story. And like plot-driven would be classic Star Wars. Yeah. That plot is happening, and that's what drives the story. I can't think of anything character-driven right now, but I'm sure we've all seen that character-driven drama where the characters drive the action. Well, then there's stuff like Dune, where it's setting-driven. Almost the point of the story is to communicate this alien world to you. And that's what Martin's game is like. Martin's setting is the point of the game. And it's an extremely detailed, rich setting. Like, I can't imagine the prep and thinking he must do to bring his game to life, but his setting is the point.
So when you say that, basically it's kind of like going to a planet and then leaving. So it sounds like each game features a dramatically different portion of the world, or?
Yeah, it does. And we've been moving toward a, I don't know how to put it. It's just everyone's different. Every little town is different. Every little town has their own ecosystem environment thing going on. And there's always the status quo. And usually our characters don't like the status quo, but there's not a lot we can do about it. Because Martin makes the game so realistic, with such realistic consequences to your actions. Mm-hmm. Okay, here's an example. We wound up on this island. And this island had this really uneasy alliance between this cult down by the docks and this thieves guild, and a lot of good people are getting screwed over by this. And I'm digging into it with Martin and trying to figure out how we can interfere and fix things. And I try a couple of things. In fact, I'll just tell a story. I tried to counteract the cult with my cleric going around healing those people that truly needed it. Now, because of the cleric's healing that I had at that level, I could only do one cure disease per day, mm-hmm. but I could also cure a bunch of wounds. So people that had like broken legs and stuff, I could cure those. So I had my character do that to try to counteract the cult, and Martin totally monkey pawed me. Like, I got what I wanted, but not in the way I wanted it. Next thing I know, there's this endless sea of need of yeah. people, of sheep in search of a shepherd, of people in need of a leader. And all of a sudden, I can't go anywhere or do anything. Martin's making me roll for the number of hours that I am delayed by vagrants and missionary or whatever looking for me to heal them, even if there's like practically nothing wrong with them. Like, hey, I got a splinter. Can you heal this? Like, no.
Okay, that's kind of awesome.
That sounds
yeah, that's kind of awesome. It's amazing. Yeah. Like, the way he does it is amazing. Like you never get... It's not a cartoon, right? When you look at G.I. Joe the cartoon, or any cartoon from us as kids, there's a right thing you can do. There's a couple of right actions you can take to fix that island. But in reality, the way Martin's laid it out, with the social pressures and the economic pressures and the strange equilibrium that's been reached, anything I do to upset the apple cart is going to cause more problems than it will solve, especially in the short term. And if I'm going to leave... You know, and not stay to maintain whatever peace I broker, then there's almost no point. So it's my characters having to learn this lesson in Martin's game that I can't just go around making the world a better place, that life is more complicated than that. And it's such a more grown-up game, I guess, than our game.
It almost sounds like there is no victory. There's only attrition. And your real victory is to make sure that you profit from the attrition.
Yeah, and having said that, we have some quests that our characters... So Martin asked me, he's like, what is your character doing? And I said, I just came up with something that he could easily make fit his world, right? I said, okay, my character, he's a cleric of this god, and you know what? He's such a god botherer that the other clerics don't like him. And I said, secretly, the other clerics sent him out on some stupid quest to get rid of him, but he is really serious about collecting all the maps that he can to put together this one ultimate atlas of the world based on every other map he can get his hands on. And that's his quest. Hmm. And Martin has, I mean, so you say that there's really no victories ever. Well, against my quest, I'm finding maps and Martin is running with it. And I'm uncovering all kinds of stuff about this lost continent that Martin is building his game around. So my character is progressing and I feel like I'm achieving really cool stuff. It's just that I can't do the popcorn Captain America, let me jump in with a couple of glib one-liners and change this island for the better. I don't have time. So, I've got to worry about my quest and move on.
So basically, like every character I've ever ran, you can't do that. You can't do the justice.
Yeah.
You can't do the cop.
Yeah, basically. Yeah, you can't be the world's police, especially if you're going to leave tomorrow.
Yeah.
So this is really interesting to me. So as long as you've played this is far and away the most I've heard about this.
Yeah, I don't talk about it very much.
No, you don't. So I know that Martin as a GM sounds like one, he creates really interesting settings, but when he is GMing a game, how is he in creating the NPCs that you have to interact with? What's that like when Martin is running a character?
He's a lot more, he doesn't act as the character. He'll occasionally make gestures and he'll occasionally use a voice, but it's pretty rare. For the most part, he just describes to us in matter-of-fact terms what the character's doing. So, for example, one character that we dealt with was this wizard that had kind of been driven mad by his power, and he basically stayed high all the time to cope with it. And I think Martin's drawing from, you know, college in the early 80s that he experienced and we didn't. But there's this kind of drug-addled wizard that we're dealing with. And Martin didn't play drug-addled, but he straight up described it. But he described the drug-addledness and the drug-addled behavior and the erratic behavior without doing it. So Martin's, he just describes it, to your point, Brian. He doesn't, like, fall into character very much. He tells us what we see and what we feel and what we hear. Well, not what we feel. He tells us what we see and what we hear, what we smell. He tells us all that without acting it out. And it works really well for Martin. By the way, just so those of you at home know, we all know Martin. We've all worked with Martin for years.
Yeah. And
Martin will never listen to this because he doesn't really engage with the social media / digital world very much. But unreservedly, Martin is the, I almost said his last name, Martin is the smartest human being I've ever met.
I agree.
Dude's fluent in Russian. Dude's fluent in German. Dude is, I mean, he's so well read that anything you bring up,
it's scary how well.
It is scary.
Like, it is scary how well read Martin is.
You meet those guys that claim to know a lot, and then you research it, and it's like, that's not right. But Martin has really read all this stuff, and not only does he know it, he'll cite his source. He'll say, oh, I read a book on that.
Yes.
And he'll tell you the author's name and all about the book, and he'll tell you all about it. And then he'll go, but I don't know very much about it. What were you going to say?
Yeah. And you're like, never mind.
And he's not being a jerk. No. He's not being a jerk. Yeah. He's just that smart.
Yep.
You have a conversation with Martin, and he makes you smarter. Like, after years of exposure to Martin, my ability to keep up, if someone new comes to lunch with Martin or someone new sees me talking to Martin and he walks away, they're like, I couldn't even follow you guys. Like, it's not me. It's Martin. You just have to learn to keep up with him.
Yep.
It's interesting, though. So, like, when you talk about the game, normally you're not talking it in terms of how much you enjoy it. You're talking about the little nagging things that, like, get on your nerves. So it sounds like he's creating this amazingly rich environment. But, like, what about this? What about this, you know, would you change if you could?
What would I change? Okay, well, I'll tell you one. Since, again, Martin's not going to listen to this. Martin is amazing at world building, and he's amazing at coming up with your unintended consequences. He is a genius at unintended consequences that feel realistic, and you're like, well, that was stupid. That is what would really happen. I'm an idiot. Martin's really good at making you feel that way. But where Martin isn't so good is he doesn't really care about the rules or follow them. So, like, I said I had a fighter and a cleric. That's wrong. I actually have a barbarian and a cleric. I just forget because I basically have to play my barbarian like a fighter, where I'm doing basic attack rolls. All my barbarian abilities, like the whirlwind and all this kind of stuff you can do it in Castles and Crusades, I don't get to do it very much because when I say that I'm going to do this ability from the book, Martin gets this look on the, gets this look on his face like I'm trying to pull a fast one. Like, he doesn't follow the rules very well. If I get a crit, you know, Martin ignores the crit rules. Martin wants to do the difficulty. Like, I mentioned the 12 versus the 18. Martin wants to do it by feel. Like, Martin will very often ask for a check, and I'll roll my d20, and I'll say I got a 17, and he'll look thoughtful for a minute, and then tell me what happens. And if you read Tracy Hickman's book, Extreme Dungeon Mastery, that's exactly what Tracy Hickman says that a good DM should do. But it gets on my nerves, and I've started challenging Martin in kind of a subtle way, not passive-aggressive, but just subtle, where I'll roll, and I'll look at my character sheet, and I say, I succeed. And he's like, well, you don't know that. And I'm like, well, I rolled above an 18, so unless you have a challenge rating, you know, my target's 18, I rolled 20-whatever total. Unless your challenge is over 7, I succeeded.
Yeah.
So I've been challenging him to follow the rules a little bit more closely, but if he were to put his foot down and say, I'm not interested in doing that, I would still play in this game because it is an amazing experience.
Do you think he's maybe intentionally, like is he afraid that, hey, if Dusty makes a successful roll on some road I didn't think he was going to go down on, it's going to blow out the rest of this story? Like, is it intentional? Or do you think he's maybe just got a concept in his head that he hasn't put numbers to and explained at the table before you make your roll?
I think it's more the latter. I don't think he's worried about the impact of the story because he's really good at letting us do whatever we want. And he's really good about, if we do succeed wildly, letting it happen. But I just think he wants to play. I think he wants to hear the number first and then decide, versus setting a difficulty and committing to it, and then I roll. So I think he wants to hear the number and then kind of think about what that means.
I could see that getting frustrating really quick.
Yeah, but again, it's minor.
Yeah.
It's a thing that I have actually, because of me challenging him slightly on the rules, I can see some behaviors changing at the table for the better as far as actually following the rules. So I think I'm having an impact. But again, you know, I love Martin. I love his game. If Martin put his foot down, I was like, no, you know, we're basically just rolling D20s and I'll tell you what happens, then I would totally do that.
Okay, cool. Let's see here. So what about Martin's game you think that you like so much that you wish that you could incorporate that you couldn't, but you couldn't because of time, capacity? What would you love to incorporate, but you just don't have the resources to do it?
You know what, man? I don't want to answer that question. I want to get to the end and I want to ask you what you've heard that you want me to incorporate. Because my worst fear is that I answer your question right now and tell you what I don't have time for, and then it turns out you think that sounds really awesome and you'd love to have it.
Okay. Can we go ahead and just answer?
Sure. Well, I mean, let me see if there's anything.
I mean, we can talk about combat. I don't think we've talked about combat too much.
Yeah.
We haven't talked about, so sorry, we do have show notes in front of us. They were kind of going off script a little bit, which is great because you're more spur of the moment that way, which is good. But I do want to talk about Martin's GMPCs. So, do you guys know what a GMPC is, by the way? I included this in the show notes, but I didn't really explain
That's
it.
What I was trying to ask earlier.
Where the GM runs a player character because you don't have enough seated at the table?
Yes.
Yeah.
So Martin does that, by the way. Martin runs two PCs. So we have a six PC party. And Martin does something really interesting here
So it's a LAN party.
Sure. Six player characters, not six personal computers. I run two, Bernard runs two, and then Martin himself runs two player characters. And I read all these horror stories online about GMPCs and what a terrible idea it is.
Are they like Mary Sue's? Is that
yes. So frequently in the horror stories that you read online, GMPCs are Mary Sue's that can do anything, and they're the real protagonists, and the PCs are there to help them out. Well, Martin doesn't do that, thankfully. Martin does this really cool thing instead. So a couple things. Number one, the GMPCs never make decisions that drive the story. We can consult. One of the GMPCs is a rogue, and that's the only rogue we have. So we will consult with the rogue sometimes and ask his opinion, and Martin will give it, and it's always an interesting perspective, but that rogue won't volunteer things and won't drive the decisions. The other really interesting thing Martin does with his GMPCs is as we have character deaths and as he has character deaths, he'll rotate in some different GMPC, and that GMPC usually has some secrets, usually has some things in the world they're trying to accomplish. And as we get to know that GMPC, it's like being on the road with a stranger, traveling together on this boat, and getting to know them. So there's that cool element of we're still exploring the world, even within our own party. And it's a great way to introduce, like, there's this one character that we didn't realize, that she was a paladin, and she died helping us. I mean, she was one of our, we have had a lot of character death, because it's a pretty unforgiving game as far as combat. But, only after she died and her people came to get her did we realize that she was the rightful heiress to this kingdom that was pretty far away.
Wow.
And I was like, we could have figured that out. I was like, has that been the case the whole time? And he's like,
yeah.
I was like, why didn't you tell us? And he goes, she doesn't talk about it.
You missed all the clues.
Well, that's not we missed. She doesn't talk about it.
Gotcha.
So Martin has this really rich character that we're fighting alongside of. And, you know, and that's Mike, you know, you make a great point that I didn't put in the show notes. Martin's game is like a Bethesda game. Like, it's like Skyrim.
Oh, wow.
Where there's so much to do. There's so many seeds and hooks and plots and so many things to engage with that you can't engage with it all. You are always leaving content behind.
Wow.
And when I run you guys, I run you like a BioWare game.
Yeah, we exhaust the content. Yeah.
Yeah, you can play this plot quest now, or you can play it later. It'll still be there, like a BioWare game.
Yeah.
Mm-mm. Martin's game's like a Bethesda game, where if you, like, this, we rented a room from this old couple who sold us out to some gnolls, and we killed the gnolls, and we came back the next day to give the old couple hell, and we were really looking forward to it. Bernard and I were really looking forward to like showing up and being like, hey, we survived.
Yeah.
But they were already gone and had clearly been killed by some other gnolls who thought they'd betray them. So Martin's really good at, no, the world keeps moving around you.
Wow.
The world doesn't wait for you to show up. The world doesn't wait for, it's not the Truman Show.
Yeah.
Where everything in the world is cued on you. The world keeps on turning, and you engage or you don't, but you miss opportunities all the time.
I don't know what to say about it. I wanted at first to say that has to take a lot of prep, but I don't get the feeling that Martin's prepping that. I feel like Martin is just organically doing that on the fly in his mind, because that's how smart he is.
Well, and when I say he's well-read, he's very well-read about history and civilizations, and he reads a lot. He reads more nonfiction than anyone I've ever met.
Yeah.
And history and civilization and how civilization works and how people relate. And I mean, the dude's, do you know what his bachelor's is in?
No.
Sociology.
Oh.
So this whole thing about having a society and what's the equilibrium the society reaches and how does it work and how does it function and all that, that's what his degree's in. So dude's really smart, and he has the background to build these really interesting societies.
What's his master's degree in?
I don't know. I think it's new with criminology, because I know he was...
That's so funny.
Karate. It's karate.
Yes, Martin also does have... He legit has multiple black belts.
Yeah.
Anyway, he is an exceptional person, and I am privileged to play in his game as often as he allows it.
So now, talking a little bit about combat, what is combat like in this system? And I'm actually more interested in how does he employ his characters in that combat with the GM?
So here's how Martin runs combat. He never does initiative, ever. You don't roll anything. Like we've gotten to where we roll once. Martin doesn't roll at all. Martin decides in his head whether you're surprised or whether they're surprised. And whoever's surprised gets to go first. And that's it. You don't get to go twice. You just get to go first.
Wait, if you are surprised, you go first?
No. If you surprise them, sorry. Okay. If you surprise them. If they surprise you, they go first.
I thought, like, oh my God, let me just chip.
Yeah. No. opposite. Strike that. Reverse it. Thank you. No. If you are surprised, bad guys go first. But in my game, right, if the bad guys surprise you, they go first. And then we roll initiative. If they win initiative, they go again.
Yeah.
Nope. And Martin's game, there's none of that. He decides who goes first. And after that, when it's your turn, he'll say, all right, guys, what do you do? And I'll just start rolling dice and telling them what happens. And so does Bernard. And it's just kind of, it's very free form, but we'll have, that's how a round goes. He tells us what's in front of us and what we can attack, and we attack it. And it's in no particular order. My characters and Bernard's characters go in whatever order, and it doesn't matter because it's our turn and then Martin's turn and then our turn and then Martin's turn. And it makes combat go really easily. Now, because of the rules thing, I'm not saying that's how Castles and Crusades works. Castles and Crusades actually has an initiative order. I don't know how it works because we've never used it. But I imagine it's somewhere between the BFRPG, you roll a D6 every round, and the fifth edition, you roll a D20 once, and then that's your order forever. It's probably somewhere in between that, but we never play it. We play Martin's way. And Martin's way works well, but Martin throws very difficult enemies at us, a very high hit die, and we almost die a lot. We are constantly almost dying.
Wow.
Martin is not merciful as far as the dice. The dice say what the dice say, and that is it in combat. It hits your AC or it doesn't, and we're all rolling in the open. Where I have seen him get merciful is if my character's on my last legs, then sometimes, not all the time, but sometimes the monsters will attack someone else. And that's how he'll control difficulty. But yeah, combat is very, very much like Pathfinder, very, very much like Pathfinder, where you throw the initiative rules out the window and you're always punching out of your weight class.
So I don't know if I asked this or if Mike asked it and I missed it. Are you playing with minis, or is this Theater of the Mind?
Always Theater of the Mind. Never minis.
Okay.
Sometimes he'll sketch something and show it to us, but no minis, no maps. I mean, sometimes I map what he's describing, and I'm trying my best to map it. Sometimes he'll let us get in a certain way into whatever we're doing, and then he'll show us a piece of a map. But it's all Theater of the Mind.
So going back to the whole setting, storytelling by setting, does he ever have like a reoccurring antagonist? So does he have an antagonist he hooks back into that story, you know, to make the Star Trek analogy, do the Klingons, you know, ever show up and you have an ongoing storyline where you're working against the Klingons or you're working for a faction to defeat another faction?
He had that for a session or two with, so one of my characters came from this place in this world called Cold Corner, which is inhabited by barbarians who followed us. And for a couple sessions, they were following us, but we dealt with them, and that was that. So, no, not really. There's not the one big bad that we're chasing down. It really, and it feels like there's no, like, if we just died, there's no necromancer summoning a demon army that's going to overrun the world. It's just a world with a lot of crap happening, and we just happen to live in it. And it's messy, just like our world, and it's complicated, just like our world. And there's not this one thing going on that we're trying to solve. Now, there is the Sunken Continent, and both Bernard and I have quests that we defined that Martin has looped into the Sunken Continent. But I very much get the sense that if the Sunken Continent were raised, it would probably affect that corner of the world, and it'd be a little annoying for a while. And then again, society would reach this equilibrium after some casualties.
Hey guys, new land. Let's make settlements.
Hooray. Yeah, or hey, these monsters attacked us for a while, but after a while, they can't support a constant sustained invasion of this huge continent of humans, and it peters out, and the far-flung kingdoms are still okay. Like, you don't get the sense that anything's going to end the world, because the world is the world, and the world is complicated, and the world, there's a lot to the world, and the world will certainly change, but there's not this world-ending big bad we're trying to chase down.
So it's probably fair to say it's a very low fantasy world where things have real world consequences and things play out in a real world kind of way.
It does. Yeah, it feels that way.
Okay.
And then a lot's based on economics and all that. Yeah, there's a lot going on, and it's not Tolkien, right? There's not the one bad guy taking over the whole world. There's just not. That's not feasible. It doesn't make any sense to Martin. Therefore, it doesn't make any sense in his world.
Yeah, Max agrees.
Max agrees. All right, so I think we've covered everything in the show notes that we wanted to cover about the game. I really do like Castles and Crusades. It's a personal thing, but I really love the way it's written. I love the books. I back it. I will say I probably will never run any of their adventures because their adventures, they're so dense. Oh my gosh. I'd say if I could tell the Troll Lord games to improve anything, it'd be to release some adventures that are a little easier to read, a little bit less text. But I love the system. I love the world. The rules. I love all that. But now I want to turn around. So what have you heard that you would want me to incorporate? If anything.
I mean, I was going to say, I don't know that I would want you to incorporate specifically anything, because I'm not saying, it sounds like, for me, it's almost an either or. It's kind of like, it's Star Trek or Star Wars. And your games are more Star Wars, and his games sound like they're more Star Trek.
Yeah, sure. That makes sense.
And I think they sound awesome. But also, at the same time, I don't know that, like, this ongoing living continuity I love Bethesda games. I mean, I am unabashedly a fan of them. And I love the fact that there's this world going on and there's just so much stuff going on. But at the same time, I'm obsessive when it comes to knowing something and having like some sort of level of intimacy with the world or whatever I'm experiencing. So it's like I can experience everything in your game unless we just take, you know, unless there's a path not taken, unless we have a choice A and a choice B and we go with A and we don't know what's going to happen. We didn't know what happened with choice B because we didn't take it. But I just like that concrete feeling that I have of experiencing everything. Like I would love to play Martin's game, but I don't know that I could get the same level of enjoyment out of playing the same that rich world with the style of combat and gameplay that we have. It just seems like they're incompatible.
You have to change your way of thinking with that rich world. You have to change the way you think. And like right now we're in Kadeem, which is Martin's version of Al-Kadeem. And Alcaneum is like this D&D setting that takes on, I mean, you could argue that there are, in today's more enlightened world, some aspects, some very negative sociological aspects of imbuing this world with the mystique of the other, and using the 1001 Arabian Nights flavor to have a very culturally insensitive view of what an Arabic culture might look like in a fantasy world. You could certainly argue that. But Martin is using the 1001 Arabian Nights flavor and this Al-Qadim stuff from back in the day to create this Qadim continent in his world where it is very alien to us. And it really feels like Martin has legit studied enough like Persian culture where...
Of course he has.
Of course he has.
To have that be accurate and not offensive.
To have it be accurate and not offensive. And you know, we'll go... We usually get wings after we play because Waldo's Wings is right there in Winston where we play. And I love Waldo's. It's my favorite wings on earth.
No affiliation.
No affiliation. And we'll go have wings and I'll say, Martin, how much of that's real? And he'll tell me about some book he read or something where he's... I feel like I'm getting educated in Martin's world, but it's messy and complicated and slavery is a big part of that world. And it's more to do with economic caste there. But my character doesn't like slavery for very good reasons and wants to end it. But there's this whole continent, this whole society built on it. And like, good luck changing that in terms of Martin's world. So I'm doing what I can as an individual character, but there's this sense of this problem is too big for my character to solve. This is just the way this society is. And there's some degree of going along to get along, just like the real world. And I don't like it, just like the real world. And I'm uncomfortable with it, just like the real world. And that sums up Martin's games. I'm often uncomfortable by the level of choice that I have and by the level of choice that I don't have.
And you're not uncomfortable, though, by what he's serving you, like we've experienced in the past.
No. No, it's just it's uncomfortable the way it would be in real life if you really went back in time and experienced this different way of thinking that was dehumanizing to other people. It would be uncomfortable, but what could you do?
So it's kind of like when we talk about Dusk a lot, but how I just had that sick feeling in my stomach based on the choice that we made to, you know, cause injury to those people that we felt were innocent. But that's like the one thing that I point to is like when I really, really felt it when it came to the RPing. But it sounds like you get that much more frequently.
Yeah. And I can't describe enough how everything around us we could engage with or not. Everything around us is deep and rich. So for example, in Martin's world of Qadim, you can hire, you know, these kids, basically these orphans, to show you around. And there's this one lady that runs all the orphans that can show you around for a few silver pieces. You know, they're guides, basically. You pay them a few silver, they take you where you want to go in this very confusing, noisy world of Qadim. Well, one of the kids got sick or got injured, and I healed the kid, and I took an interest in this kid, and I start trying to, like, follow this kid, and Martin's like, you never see him again. And finally, he's like, you know what? Roll wisdom. And I succeed, and he's like, you realize you've never seen the same kid twice. And I'm like, what? And now I want to dig into that. Like, everything in this
she's
world.
She's farming the kids.
Everything. I don't know what she's doing with the kids.
Yeah.
But we're now trying to figure her out. And because we became interested in her, Martin gave us more content. Like, we discovered far below in the Undercity. So the deeper you go, the older stuff gets in the Undercity. We found this fresco with what is clearly her face from hundreds of years ago.
That's awesome.
So now we're like, is she a vampire? Is she... And we don't know. That's where we left off. So everything from the seemingly mundane people that you hire to get stuff done to, I mean, the mayor to whatever, to whoever you're dealing with, everything is interesting content that you can engage with. And you don't always successfully engage. Sometimes, sorry, you know, you killed this person. You know what? You pissed this person off and you killed them and now you'll never know. It's like, and that's Martin's game.
Wow.
And it's so different, but it feels like the most old school of old school games I've ever played.
I really like the idea of unintended consequences, and I think I'd like, so I'm going to say this cautiously, I think I would like you to start implementing that in our game, but I can see that getting really frustrating really quick too, but I think I'd like that because I think for me personally, it would break some of my gamer brain problems that I ran into with our games, where I'm, you know, pushing every button trying to find the secret door.
So. Yes, you can. What Mike's referring to is that you can tell when he plays, and Susan, my wife, has seen you play and commented on it. Mike thinks he can win every interaction. That there's that, there, just like in a Bethesda game, there's that right series of things to say, or that right role, or that right thing you can do to win every interaction. And some interactions are just, some interactions are the Kobayashi Maru.
Yep.
Cool. Anything else, guys?
No, it's a great game. It's a different game, and I'm lucky to play in it, and I wanted to share a little bit about a completely different way to think about gaming.
Well, that's awesome. Well, that's RPG Lessons Learned. We'll see you next week.
People call them postmortems, evaluations, appraisals, reviews, retrospectives. We call them lessons learned, and we're sharing ours with you.